The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nichol. Later on in the show, Don, Frank and Mark will be here to discuss the possibility of Rabiot joining Manchester United. But we kick things off by welcoming Sid Lowe into the show. Sid's in Barcelona and at the start of the new season. And the soap opera that is Barca continues, Sid. Interesting, we know they're desperate to get rid of Frankie de Jong. And reports are suggesting that there's some sort of irregularities with the extension contract that he signed in 2020. This sounds extraordinarily complicated. Keep it simple for me and Stevie.
Yeah. I'm going to try and keep it simple. Now, look, the first thing to say is that this was a report in The Athletic today, and so we'll take The Athletic's version of events as being the one that we follow. Essentially, what they are alleging is that the current Barcelona administration, of course, run by Joan Laporta, the president, and his board, have said to De Jong, when you last renewed your contract with the former administration, that deal wasn't quite clear-cut, and that deal could be problematic, and therefore you could be in trouble and they could be in trouble. And so if I was you, I would go back to the previous deal, essentially. Go back to what it was before and we can sort this out. Now, that's, if you like, the way it's projected to him. But this takes an enormous amount of unpacking. Essentially what the accusation is, and this, by the way, has been seen in stories that have broken all the way through the day in response to the Athletic story. And it's really important to stress this. The chronology matters in response to the Athletic story. In other words, a story that might have made this look in administration look bad because it was in terms of saying things like, you know, there was an implicit threat there, has been picked up and said, okay, well, let's explain where this comes from. Now, I'm going to try and put this in Stevie Nichol terms for you to try and simplify it. Essentially, the accusation is something along the lines of, we were paying you one shepherd's pie. We are going to reduce this to paying you a quarter of a shepherd's pie. And we can say to everyone, look, we've made 75%, we've 75% of what we are paying. We are not paying anymore. We've saved money on this shepherd's pie we are paying to Frankie de Jong. But we are also saying to him, but don't worry, in 2 years' time, we'll be paying you three shepherd's pies. Now, obviously, the proportions here may not be exact, right? But we're talking about the kind of the basic principle. And so what happens is that new administration takes over and suddenly finds that, wait a minute, we're having to pay Frankie de Jong three shepherd's pies. This isn't right. And so essentially the money was backloaded, so it became a new administration's problem. Now, the new administration is saying to Frankie de Jong, this deal you signed about the shepherd's pie is not right, and it could be a problem for people, and we really should go back to the initial deal of one shepherd's pie. And of course, what they're doing now is saying, and this shows that something was wrong with the previous administration, but what the previous administration had tried to do before it walked out the door was essentially pass the problem on to the new administration so it could demonstrate in its accounts that it only given Frankie de Jong a quarter of a shepherd's pie in that final year. And I don't know if that's explained it or not,
no.
But everybody's hungry now.
No, indeed, that's clear. But this is embarrassing, isn't it, for the club and for those players that are coming and joining Barcelona. There's got to be a little bit of a red flag going, they could do this to me.
Well, look, those players have already joined Barcelona. And also, I think one thing that probably should be said is that this current administration has been relatively clear in the sense that they've said very, very straightforwardly, we have inherited an economic crisis. They use those phrases that we talked about a few weeks ago when they said when we came, the club was clinically dead, we're still in intensive care, we're hoping to get the patient down onto the ward, and at some point we're hoping to get out of the hospital entirely. But that involves changing things. It involves pulling these economic levers that they've talked about. It involves dropping salaries across the board. It involves fixing that salary mass. And so the players that come in know that because we've said this publicly. Now their new deals, at least this is the theory, fit within a new salary structure. Because right. Even players like Robert Lewandowski, for example, what he is earning now, having come in as the star, having come in as the new franchise player, the person that in theory is transformative at the club, even he is earning a very small salary compared to what the really big salary earners were earning under the previous regime, the ones that are still left. Busquets, Alba, Piquet, and up to a point, although not quite as high as those three, Frankie de Jong. And so that's essentially the position that Barcelona are in. Because, of course, going in parallel to all this, and we've talked about this all the way through the summer, there are lots of things going on in parallel. Going in parallel to this is Barcelona trying to convince those players to accept smaller salaries. Previously, there have been payment deferrals, but of course, the problem with a payment deferral is the time that you deferred it to eventually arrives. So now it's about saying, right, we need to make cuts across the board.
And of course, as we saw there, some big players coming in, as you mentioned. A lot of them played against Pumas. They were great, obviously. But you look at the front line was what? Dembele, Lewandowski, Rafinha. As it stands, am I right in saying none of them can play against Rayo Vallecano this weekend because they haven't been registered?
That's correct. So let's try and explain the very basics of the mechanics of the Spanish fair play, financial fair play rules, which are known as the salary limits. Essentially these, and these are very different to the financial fair play rules in other leagues, because this isn't a punishment after the event. This is not punitive. This is preventative. So the Spanish league, and the formula is a little bit more complicated than this, but essentially it's what have you got coming in? What have you got going out in salaries? Can you afford that? We'll set the level. If you don't meet that level in terms of your salary mass, we will simply not allow you to register a player. You can go and buy them if you want, but we will simply not allow you to register them. Why do they do this? Because they think, obviously, with time, the clubs will stop buying these players. Now, that's why that happens. But, of course, this plays out over the course of a summer. We haven't reached the end of the summer yet, although we have reached the start of the season. And essentially, if you don't meet that criteria, you can't register those players. It's an automated system. What happened last week was that Barcelona spoke to the league. They presented them with their audited accounts and essentially asked to be told exactly where that limit was at and whether or not they could reach it. And they were told, you're not at that limit. You haven't raised enough money, basically, to be able to register all these players on the fundamental criteria of them fitting within your salary limit. So how do you fix that? Well, you fix that by forcing some players out, by bringing that salary mass down, or by, and this is what will happen, I think, over the next couple of days, basically going for that fourth economic lever. And that fourth economic lever will be a sale of another percentage, around about 25% of Barca Studios, which they hope will raise 100 million euros. If they can do that, then they should be able to get all of those players, or most of those players, through the salary financial fair play rules in time for the start of the season. But of course, that fourth economic lever, which they're now saying they will pull, they knew they might have to, but they were hoping that they wouldn't have to.
What a mess, Sid.
Yes, that's true. It is a mess. I realise there's a risk of me being sort of too indulgent of Barcelona here, but to try and explain the mechanics of it, it's a mess. But all of these kind of calculations, of course, are done over the whole of the summer, and they're still 3 weeks away from the end of the summer. So there is still time for players to move on, like Umtiti, like Frankie de Jong, like one or two others, and Martin Brathwaite, for example, and Memphis Depay. And that then, of course, that brings the salary mass down, which means that you're not so far away from the actual figure, what you're actually paying, being the figure the league allows you to pay. It also, of course, brings money in for transfer fees. It also allows you a certain degree of room for manoeuvre. So there's still time. But the season starts now. The season doesn't start in 3 weeks' time. So that's problematic in that sense. Of course, part of this is about a response to an economic crisis that was inherited. Partly it's about saying that, you know what, to come out of the economic crisis, we need to create this kind of virtuous cycle. It's the way that Barcelona talk about it. So we need a good team. We need a team that people want to come and watch. We need to make it exciting because that grows income over time. And so there's a really quite difficult balancing act. There was that very kind of visual phrase that was made by, I think it was Laporta or maybe his vice president, about a month or so ago, when he said it's very difficult to breathe in and breathe out at the same time. And of course, the point he was making is we need to cut costs, but we also need to strengthen our team. And those two things seem to be mutually contradictory. So you have to try and find a way through that. And obviously the other part of this is that's partly because the financial fair play rules in Spain are so much stricter than everywhere else.
Sid, thank you so much for coming on and explaining that in a term that I think we can pretty much all follow. Go and get some shepherd's pie now. We appreciate it. Sid, of course, will be at the heart of our coverage throughout La Liga season. And it all kicks off this weekend, doesn't it? The first match, Osasuna against Sevilla, Barcelona against Rayo Vallecano. That game live on ABC. And on Sunday, Almeria, where Sid will be against Real Madrid. And Monday features our team of the day, Real Betis, in action against Elche.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate
isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Just a reminder, a brand new season of the Gab and Jules podcast is underway. The latest edition is available to listen to now. Gab and Jules are joined by their special guest, Mark Ogden, who also joins us now, as well as Don Hutchinson and Frank LaBeouf is here. Mark, obviously, you're on to talk about Manchester United and the latest rumours that Rabiot is heavily linked to a move from Old Trafford from Juventus.
Yeah, well, it's more than a rumour, Dan. United are interested, and at the moment it's more a case of a potential standby in case De Jong doesn't happen. But I think we're getting to that point now where De Jong is looking maybe 50-50, 40-60 against, because it's taking so long. So Rabiot is an option. And listen, I don't think it's a great option. I think it's as bad an option as Marko Arnautovic is an option up front. But it's where United are at, and it's where I think the Glazer family have put the club now, in the sense that, you know, I think we have to defend the people that are charged with signing the players here, because people like John Murtagh have been, I think, left, you know, high and dry. Because if the Glazers, as Richard Arnold said earlier this summer, had the money there for the manager to spend, they wouldn't be looking at Adrian Rabiot and Marko Arnautovic. They'd be looking at much better players. They'd have got better players in. So the fact they're looking at players like Rabiot, who, you know, let's be honest, if the fans turned against Paul Pogba because of his body language, Rabiot's going to be even worse, because his body language is some way below Paul Pogba. So I just don't see how it works. I think it's just a panic signing. It's a bad signing, but it'll probably happen, because I don't think De Jong's going to happen.
Frank, Rabiot to Manchester United, this is the perfect vehicle for him to rejuvenate his career?
I don't know that. He's a good player. He was evicted from the national team and from Didier Deschamps because of problems and vocal comments. But Didier Deschamps called him back. So it says a lot about the talent of the player. I think he can fit into the Manchester United squad. But it's a strong character. It's a difficult character as well. He has issues where there are issues with the mothers everywhere that he plays. She's his agent, and she's never been very easy with coaches, clubs or national teams. But football wise, he's a very good player. He played for Paris Saint-Germain, played for Juventus. He can bring something. I don't know if he can help Manchester United, but it's not a bad signing. But let's see how he can cope with the Premier League. Let's see how he can handle the rhythm of the Premier League. Is somebody a little bit slow, I would say, for the Premier League in the middle of the park. But he has the technique. He has the power of coping correctly with the Premier League.
Don, you've seen a lot of him at Juventus. Does this make sense?
I think it makes sense in terms of what he might bring, and he might bring balance playing on the left of the three if that's where Ten Hag's going to play him. I did feel sorry for him under Max Allegri over the last 18 months. Max Allegri played more or less a 4-4-2, and he played Rabiot as a sort of left winger. And everyone knows Rabiot is not a left winger. He's not blessed with any pace. Technical ability, he's a really good player. But it's the fact that what he brings, he doesn't bring assists, doesn't bring goals. He's not really a number six where he's a holder. He's basically a left-sided number eight where you want more from him in terms of his numbers. And as Frank said there, he's not particularly dynamic neither. So coming into a Man United side that's struggling with Fred and McTominay, and then you're going to be judging him on what he brings, he doesn't really bring a lot. And having a lack of pace in the Premier League could be a problem. So the body coming in makes sense, but the signing in terms of the player, I think Man United at the minute are just shooting darts everywhere, and Rabiot's another one.
Well, it's not good for my top four prediction, is it?
There's a lot of things that aren't going to be a top four prediction.
Yeah, I don't really see how he makes them any better.
Really?
He doesn't stand out in any particular facet of the game. Yes, he's a good player. Tell you what, can I change that now?
Oh, wait, you've got him
seventh.
Seventh,
Stevie,
now.
Seventh.
Tell you what. Yeah, fifth. Even fifth is beginning to look like a step. Especially if you're bringing Arnautovic in as well. Yeah. I don't know what this guy excels at.
Right.
He can keep the ball, and he can keep the ball moving. But I tell you what, there's a lot of players can do that. I mean, John's just laid it out for you. He doesn't score goals.
Yep.
He doesn't assist. He doesn't get around the field. He's not a hard man. I mean, all the things that Man United need, and he doesn't have any of them.
Hasn't been the best 24 hours if you're a Manchester United fan. Obviously, that defeat against Brighton, the Rabiot news hasn't exactly got people partying in the streets of Salford. And, Mark, we're in a situation where Arnautovic has been linked to United as well. What's going on? Do they not have scouts?
They've got scouts, but I don't think they know what they're doing. Look, I think the situation is, that's probably a bit too flippant, but that Ten Hag is wanting Arnautovic. He thinks that he can get something out of him. He knows him from when he coached him at 20, 10, 12 years ago, and he knows his character. But I just think the problem is, we were all told that, again, more messaging from United 6 months ago, that when the new manager comes in, it'll be an approach where the manager has a say, the transfer scouts committee has a say, and if one party thinks that a potential sign is not a good idea, they can have a veto. Now, we saw that in place when Mourinho wanted Perisic and he wanted Jerome Boateng, there were veto that the club thought, no, we're not going down this road. Ten Hag seems to be getting everything he wants, because Ten Hag wants Arnautovic, Ten Hag wants Rabiot. Now, if you're Man United's transfer committee scouts, you should say, look, Marco Arnautovic, great talent, obviously, you know, on his day can be a world beater, but that day doesn't come around very often. That's why he's at Bologna. That's why he spent 2 years in China. That's why no big club has ever touched him, because, I mean, he really is a kind of a B-list version of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and that's being polite to Arnautovic. He's just a bad idea. But that's where United are at. And as I was saying earlier, if the Glazers really had the money, which Richard Arnold said that they would have for the manager this year, they wouldn't be looking at Marco Arnautovic and Adrian Rabiot. They've got the business done by now. It's such a bad indictment of where Man United are at that Arnautovic... Look, they've signed Odion Ighalo, Radamel Falcao, all these players, even Zlatan. These players that are this... past the best and the short-term fixes. United haven't signed a centre-forward for 10 years since they signed Robin van Persie, a proper centre-forward. Now, people say they signed Lukaku. Fair enough, they signed Lukaku, it didn't work out. So they signed one proper centre-forward, a young centre-forward in 10 years. That's why they've got the problems they have. So why is Arnautovic going to solve the problem? It's another short-term fix. It's just... I'm lost for words on this one. I was staggered when I found out that he was going... They'd actually put an offering for him. Not rumours, they put an offering for Marco Arnautovic.
Are you just as shocked, Don?
I am. I mean, I've seen him at Bologna last season, Dan, and to be fair to him, he did have a good season. He did play well. But he just goes against everything that Man United need. If they want a centre-forward to press from the front, that's not his style. I mean, I can't imagine what Ronaldo would be thinking if Ronaldo's a few days behind, weeks behind in pre-season, and then he's sat on the bench next week against Brentford or Liverpool the game after, and Arnautovic comes in and starts. I mean, I couldn't imagine the face on Ronaldo, so... For Man United fans, I think it just sends the wrong message if the club is thinking about getting rid of Ronaldo and bringing Arnautovic in. It just puts everyone on a bit of a down. It just deflates everyone, I think, bringing him in.
Well, let's talk about Ronaldo as you brought him up, Don. Mark, what are you hearing behind the scenes about what has happened over the last week with Ronaldo?
Well, We know that he left early against Rayo Vallecano. Initially, it was suggested that the club weren't too bothered by it, but then Ten Hag put that straight by saying he was very bothered with it. And, you know, Ten Hag's trying to lay the law down there. I think Ten Hag would be happy for Ronaldo to go. And we know that Ronaldo would be happy to go. And I think by the end of the window, Ronaldo will probably go because he doesn't want to be there. The new manager is trying to plan for the future with, you know, with Rashford, with Martial, with Sancho, with Alanga. And Ronaldo doesn't fit in. I think what will happen here is that the end of the window will come and Ronaldo might drop his wage demands. United will accept that they have to kind of maybe drop what they want. And somebody at some point will find that Ronaldo is worth the risk. I mean, he's not really a risk because he will score goals. But at the moment, he's on too much money and there's too much involved for him to move. But by the time the window comes to a close, a club will panic and he'll go. I just don't see how it works for anybody for Ronaldo to stay at United because he's just a lightning rod. I mean, we saw yesterday that the moment a goal was conceded, that picture of Ronaldo's face with his eyes rolling and Ten Hag shaking his head behind it. Every time that somebody scores or something happens against United, it'll pan to Ronaldo. It's a distraction they don't need. And I don't know why the club have persisted with it. They should have moved him on ages ago because this was always going to happen, that it would be a distraction. Yesterday, he could have come on and scored the winning goal. Imagine how that would have played out. Or if it happens next week, a guy that doesn't want to be there, they don't really want him there, and he's, you know, he's got everyone on a piece of string.
Why did Ten Hag play him yesterday, Mark?
Well, he had him on the bench at first, but he brought him on because they needed a goal. I mean, they were desperate, weren't they? I think if the game had gone to plan, he would have sat Ronaldo on the bench and kept him there. That was the gamble, that they could win without Ronaldo. And obviously they couldn't. They couldn't win with him in the end. But I think he was trying to make a point that, look, you are not the future, so I'm going to try and do something different with Eriksen in this kind of false nine position. That didn't work either. So, yeah, I know I had to kind of, you know, swallow it and put Ronaldo on the second half, and it didn't work either. So I don't think he wanted to play him. I think he wanted to win without him, but that didn't happen.
How bad were they yesterday, Stevie?
They were worse than they were under the previous manager, Ranieri. That's how bad they were. I'm kind of running out of things to say about them. They're becoming... If you take all the off-the-field stuff away, there's nothing to talk about.
Right.
Because they're irrelevant on the field. They become irrelevant from the first whistle to the last. It's only because they're Man United and Ronaldo's there and they've changed all the managers and the only thing to talk about is all that stuff. Because there is nothing to talk about on the field of play.
If you're Ten Hag, you have this squad, how do you fix it?
You can only fix it by getting in different players.
It's that.
You can't turn water into wine. You can't.
They're trying to get in Rabiot and announce of it.
Well, you've got even less chance than that. I mean, seriously, really, you know, it becomes the old adage about the coach and the players.
Right.
And this Man United team right now, this squad of players, absolutely confirms that it doesn't matter how good the coach is. If you have players who are not capable of playing at a level where that club should be, then it's not going to happen. And you can talk to your blue in the face and you can stay from 9 in the morning till 9 at night on the training field. But if the players aren't good enough, if they can't take it in, if they can't deliver it, eventually you have to get out the door and you have to bring in players that can do it. And all it's telling you right now, this Man United squad, is whoever's been bringing the players in through the door doesn't know what they're doing. And it's as simple as that. You can go and switch Ten Hag over to City and bring Pep over to Man United.
Yep.
Manchester United will still be getting beat.
Do you agree, Frank?
I do. And it is what it is. You have to change the individuals. You have to change, because the thing is, well, if you only change the coach, you don't change the mentality of the players, you don't change the mentality of the dressing room, you have to break everything and then start from scratch, almost. It will be different players, you can do different tactics, but it's like you have a gangrene and you try just to put some bandages on top of it. And you don't treat the problem. And the gangrene gets bigger and bigger, and until something happened, which is the death of the body, you know, you didn't do anything. It's what you have to do. You have to break everything and start from scratch, because that's what it is. Because you cannot blame Ten Hag right now. It would be insane to do so, because the guy started only standing for Manchester United, and we saw so many coaches coming and failing that you have at some point think that the players are the cause of the problems. And that's what it is, and that's why I agree with Stevie. You have to change the individuals to make sure you can be successful again.
But how much of it is a platform to change these individuals, Mark?
Well, I don't think there is, and I think it does get back to the owners again. I think they've been there, what, for nearly, I think, 17, 18 years now. They don't have the finances to make a difference. They don't have the expertise. We've seen that in the appointments they've made at senior level, you know, with Ed Woodward there for nearly 10 years, Richard Arnold. They don't have the expertise. So if you don't have the finance, you need the expertise. That's what Liverpool have done. Liverpool don't have the finance. They, you know, they don't make this as much money as Man United do, but they've got the best people and the best in the key positions because their owners are smart. The Glazers aren't smart because they haven't made smart appointments. So without the finance and the expertise, they also lack the ambition. You look around Old Trafford and it's so faded, it's so dated. There's no sense that they want to be the best. There's no sense that they have this driving ambition to put United back to the top. So when you've got that combination, no finance, no expertise, no ambition, what chance has the coach got, the players got? They've got no chance because the owners, they're taking money out every year. Yeah, they do spend money on players, but they're taking money out, 70, 80 million out. Now, that money could have bought, you know, that could have gone towards buying Declan Rice, who would make a massive impact. It could have gone towards signing, you know, beating Liverpool to Darwin Nunez in January when he was available for £60 million. Didn't do it. It's the owners that's the problem. Until the owners change, the Man United won't change because they've had so many rolls of the dice and caught wrong since Ferguson left that it has to be the owners. They're the one consistent thing through that last 10 years. It's the owners. Lack of expertise, lack of money and lack of ambition.
So having said all of that, do you still have them finishing in the top four, Mark, as you did last week ahead of the start of the season?
No, but I'll stick with it because there's 37 games to go.
Wow, but what's going to change? You've just spent the whole last 10 minutes slamming them.
Well, exactly. What's going to change? You know, I can't... Do you need you? But yeah, look, it looks really bad. But I think the reason why I put them in the top four is because I didn't think they could be as bad as last year. I thought people like Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho would be better. Now, Rashford started yesterday like his conference is as fragile as ever. Now, hopefully, for United's sake, these players will at some point find the way. But they look a long, long way short.
And Don?
Well, I'll take you back to last season, Dan. And Ralf Rangnick didn't get anything right, you know, in his comments and how the football was played and improving players. But he said one thing that probably stands correct as you're sitting here watching Man United now. And he said after the 5-0 loss against Liverpool, we need 10 players. He said, we need 10 players. And you see the list that's just been put up before. 8 players have gone and 3's come in. So if Ralf Rangnick's saying 10 players are needed and they ship out 8 and only bring 3 in, they're miles behind. He also said, and his quote's not mine, he went, we are 6 years away from Liverpool. And you're watching them at the weekend, same old players. So what's going to change? That's why when I've done my predictions at the start of the season, I had them in 7th because I don't see, apart from a good manager who's managing the same players and probably a little bit less quality, I'm thinking what is going to change? And nothing changed against Brighton at the weekend from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Ralf Rangnick.
Speaking of changes, of course, when we initially asked you who was going to win the league, you said Manchester City. You then saw Liverpool beat them in the Community Shield. I'm just wondering, off the back of what we saw in the opening weekend, Don, if you were going to change your mind again.
Oh, yeah, Liverpool down in 6th after drawing against Fulham. Standard. No, I'm not. And I'm not because there's 111 points to play for.
Oh, that's quick math. 111 points to play for. Is that right?
It is right.
3 times 37, yeah. It was definitely not. You definitely just didn't do that on the spot.
No, someone told me a couple of days ago.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Of course, when it comes to Manchester City, it's Erling Haaland who grabbed all the headlines. Frank, how impressed were you with him?
I am, and I've always been, you know, because I think the guy is so mature. He's like fearless. He knows what he's worth. He knows how to make sure everybody's going to love him. He makes the efforts, you know, work hard. It shows a little bit of experience on that penalty, you know, goes with what he has to do. He exactly knows what the goalkeeper is going to do. But what I like about the club is they allowed him to kick the penalty and to get into the numbers very quickly. That's what it is. And the Buddha has talked.
But you said if you get fouled and win the penalty, you shouldn't take the penalty, Frank.
Yes, but that guy is the exception to the rule.
Oh, he's like, I see.
That's what I say. You see.
Stevie, when this goal went in, you called me and you said, what, fancy trying to keep a high line against this guy?
I said, good luck keeping a high line against this guy. As soon as it happened, I thought about Liverpool's high line.
Right.
I'm like, what are they going to do now? Because you can't do that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for everybody, if you've actually closely watched those two goals, West Ham were actually sat pretty much on the edge of the box for the penalty.
Yeah.
And he ran in behind as well. So what do? If you hold a high line, he'll run in behind you. If you sit on the edge of your box, he'll still get in behind you. I mean, how do you stop that? How do you stop it? I don't know.
Mark, he's box office, isn't he, for the Premier League?
He's amazing. And watching him yesterday, I mean, I saw him in the Community Shield as well. And I thought he was better than people like me maybe gave him credit for. The fact his movement was so good and he looked like he's always on edge. And I think he was amazing at West Ham. And, you know, comparisons are always a tricky thing, but he reminds me of a young Wayne Rooney in the sense that he's got no fear whatsoever. He just backs himself all the time. He's the most confident player I've seen since Rooney. Picking the ball up, taking a penalty. No doubt in his mind he was going to take it and score it. He just looks like he doesn't believe he can fail. And when you've got that attitude as a centre forward, you're going to score loads of goals. And the second goal was just, you know, the way he opened his body up and curled it into the corner was something else. So he's going to score lots and lots of goals. And he's a great talent. You can't say anything but that. He's a fantastic player.
So everyone's positive, you know, Erling Haaland, great. Manchester City look good. Don, I want to talk about Jack Grealish hating Erling Haaland.
No. I asked for the analysis because we'd done the analysis at the Premier League and it was 0-0 at the time.
Premier League.
No, it was 0-0 at the time and Jack Grealish kept coming inside, as I said, he did in the Community Shield. And then Erling Haaland made one run in behind and Grealish didn't put him in. And then minutes later...
Grealish just passed into a mere pre-season.
Pre-season's pre-season. Come on, man. You know, you've got to judge it on what you're seeing in the Community Shield and obviously match day one. You know, this is a totally different game. But Erling Haaland, the point what I was trying to make was Erling Haaland offered the run to Jack Grealish and he didn't play it. Now, he might do after seeing the ball of Gundogan when he put him through for the penalty. That's the Erling Haaland run where he just gets his head down and he sprints forward. This is brilliant centre-forward play. Look, you know, you get in a hole. That's the one where Grealish didn't put him in. That's quite a simple ball. So Erling Haaland's made the run. So now Grealish has seen that he didn't put him in. He'll think, right, that's what I need to do. I'm learning. Then all of a sudden you fast forward and you've got to stick him in there, Dan. You've got to put him in. It's not that hard of a ball. And Gundogan and Kevin De Bruyne, our Pep was actually a little bit livid. And then De Bruyne gets the ball in the second half. He puts the perfect pass to the run. He scores. Gundogan put it on a plate for him. But the players are now getting used to the runs of Haaland. When he runs forward, put him through because no one, as Stevie said, no one is going to catch him.
So good start for City. Of course, Liverpool dropping points. Can only manage that 2-2 draw against Fulham. Bad news today. Thiago looks like he's out for up to 6 weeks, Stevie.
Yeah.
How big a blow is that?
That's a problem. You know, Keita, they say, was just ill.
Yes.
But he hasn't been convincing since he moved to Liverpool. What, 70 million? Curtis Jones is injured. Oxlade-Chamberlain's injured. James Milner, yes, will give you a period of time. He can't give you 90. So Liverpool starting 11 straight off the bat in the middle of the park has a question mark against it.
We'll say thank you very much to Mark. A reminder that Extra Time, as always, is available every day. Frank and Don will be back for that to answer your questions. Of course, Stevie with us as well.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Frank and Don joining us to answer your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you for your tweets. Stevie with us. Don and Frank, you're looking very studious today.
Well, I don't know. I'm attentive to what Stevie says, you know, and I would have put Messi in the top 10, of course.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, this is Stevie saying that Messi's goal didn't deserve to be in the top 10, despite the fact it was a spectacular bicycle kick.
It was not spectacular. It wasn't even smooth. It was an ugly, It was an ugly overhead.
A goal's a goal, though, isn't
it's
it?
It's a goal's a goal, yes.
But you wouldn't give it that much.
Well, it's not smooth, is it? All right. It's not silky about it.
Don?
It's a mishit.
Where do you stand on Messi's bicycle kick?
It's a good one, but the volleys that I think were 2 and 3 were technically ridiculously hard. They're better than Sarr's goal from the halfway line.
All right, okay then. Would you have Messi in the top 10 though, Don?
I think
we showed 10.
Yes, but you
of course it's in the top 10 if we only showed 10.
You just said you wouldn't have him in the top 10.
Yeah, but we just showed 10 goals.
Yes, but you can still use some sort of gumption and initiative.
Let me tell you something. If you'd asked me to pick a top 10, I would have found another goal.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Don't ask me.
Fulham's opener, maybe.
Fabian Schär, Newcastle.
Oh, don't bring Newcastle into it, Don. For Don, what's the percentage chance that Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard both get fired this season?
Zero. Ooh. Zilch.
Oh.
Why?
Zilch. Zero.
Why?
Yeah, zilch.
So Frank's a... Lampard's not going to make the end of the season.
Both of them getting fired this season.
Well, no. Gerrard started badly, that defeat against Bournemouth.
To be honest, Dan, you're right, that was a shocker. I mean, if you're a Villa fan going into that game thinking Bournemouth, Scotty Parker was a weird one. He turned around and said, we're not ready for the Premier League. We've got a worse squad now than we did have 2 or 3 years ago. And you go there as a Villa fan, player, manager, you think this is 3 points. And you lose a 2-0, that sticks you on the back foot, puts you under a tiny bit of pressure. But I think the Connor Cody signing today that Everton got will certainly help alongside Tarkowski. I think they're getting there. They're making one or two other signings. I think Idrissa Gueye might be signing as well. So I think the chance of them both going is highly unlikely.
Mm. What do you make of the Tyrone Mings situation, Steve? You've been following this. Steven Gerrard's taken his captaincy off him, dropped him as well. And he said he'll only be back in the team once he looks me in the eye and shows me that he's ready. Is that something you wouldn't mind going public as a player? Is that a gamble?
Well, I guess Gerrard has to say something. You can't just... The guy who was the captain and who seemingly was your defensive rock,
yes,
all of a sudden disappears and isn't playing.
Right.
You're going to have to come and say something.
He's got a niggle.
Well, you can't say that forever.
Well, you said...
You can say that if he's going to be... If you're not happy with him and the thinking is, you know what, I'm going to give him a kick up the backside, he's not going to play for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And you can say that. But it seems to be a major fallout and he is not happy. And Steven Gerrard seems to be the type of guy who, if you're on the wrong side of him,
right,
it's going to be tough to get the other side back.
Don, how would you respond if a manager went public and said something like that about you?
Take it on the chin, Dan. Take it on the chin. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to look in the mirror. You've got to be man enough to take criticism from your manager. You've got to respect them as well. I mean, what else does it do in our day? I mean, I'm pretty sure Frank and Steve will agree. You're not just going to collapse and go, oh, that's it. I want to move. I want out. Phone your agent. I think what you would do probably is you'd probably knock on the door if you're Tyrone Mings and have a chat with Stevie and have that eye to eye and face to face conversation where you get a vibe if the manager still fancies you or once you've gone from the football club, and you'll get that.
What's the vibe, Don?
Well, no, when you have the conversation, if you sit there in front of Stevie G and you ask him, I think he's honest enough to say, you know, I've had a manager like Walter Smith, who I told you before, when he signed John Collins and Olivier Decor. And Walter Smith got me in the office and said, you can leave. And I went, why? And he went, because I've signed Olivier Decor and John Collins. And I said, I'm better than them two. And he liked it. I shut the door. And months later, when I got myself back on the side and he ended up playing the three, I spoke to his number two, Archie Knox, and he went, best thing you ever said that. Walter liked what you said there, because you could have just packed your bags and gone.
Oh. Well done, Don. Pat yourself on the back.
There you go.
Do you ever look at what the current players of today that are at a similar level to you were making the salary-wise and become slightly miffed? Stevie, this is kind of apt for you, I feel. There's so much more money invested in the game today for not only salaries but training and infrastructure.
I don't look at players who are good players.
Right.
The only time I think about the money side of it is when I see some players playing in the Premier League earning millions and they shouldn't be there.
Right.
That's the only time you get miffed. Other than that, no. I mean, no.
No?
No.
Frank and Don are rich, so it doesn't apply.
The best players deserve to get the best players deserve to get what they can.
I ain't Don, rich.
Don automatically goes, I ain't rich. Frank's
like, rich.
Yeah.
I ain't rich. It's 11:30 and I'm on this show. I ain't rich.
Oh, well, there you go. That's what divorce does you, Don. Right,
exactly.
Which result over the weekend impressed you guys the most and which result concerned you guys a little, Don?
I think both in the same game, Dan. I think the Bournemouth Villa game.
Do you think Steven Gerrard will get sacked?
No, but I mean, it's a shocker
for him.
You
say yes, Don.
It's a shocker for him because what it does do, it puts you under pressure. And as I said before, the Villa fans travelling to Bournemouth thinking, this is a definite 3 points. We can be optimistic. We can try and, you know, try and get a seventh or an eighth. Because they fell off a cliff last season, don't forget. Their form at the end of the season was wretched. It was awful. So you have a pre-season, you stick all that behind you. You go to Bournemouth and you go, right, we'll win. Then all of a sudden you don't. You lose 2-0 in the Manor as well. That puts you under pressure. And for Scotty Parker's Bournemouth, I don't think anyone really give him a prayer apart from it being the first day of the season, and they'll probably still go down. But what are 3 points for them?
What about you, Frank? Which result impressed you, or which one gave you cause for concern?
The result which impressed me the most was the Fulham game against Liverpool, because we always talk about the so-called better team and try to criticize them because they weren't very good, and it was the case of Liverpool. But you have to mention the quality of what Fulham showed on the field against them. They were compact. They played well, and I was very impressed. The belief they had in their football, and they completely deserved to win that game for me. They drew, sorry. So it was a good point for Liverpool, but I think Fulham did very well. I'm very concerned about Manchester United. Yeah. What I saw is, it's really appalling. It seems to me, and it's crazy, because you take all players individually, they're all good players, but it's like they play again for the first time. With each other, they don't know each other. They don't know what to do when they have the ball. There is no thought whatsoever about what they have to do, and I don't see any light because I think they're really in the tunnel.
Frank, what's that gold thing over your right shoulder?
Oh, that's here. Here?
Yeah.
That's
what's that? Oh, why do you have that there?
Look here.
Hold on, he's got two.
No, I've got three.
Oh, I thought...
I've got three. Okay.
Get in there, okay. Frank. Love it.
Look
love
at
it,
that.
Frank.
So that's so, obviously that's the World Cup, the Euros. Yeah. What's the one in the middle?
That's the Confederation Cup we won against Japan. So it's three things that we won in 3 years. 98, 2000, 2001. Bye-bye.
Ah, there you are.
Voilà.
Where are your trophies, Don?
I can't compete with that, Dan. That's top notch. That's top draw.
Okay. Stevie,
thank you, Dan.
We've still had a lot of people very angry at Stevie's comments on Friday, where he said basically that Arsenal look like the same old Arsenal, have not improved since last season, and he doesn't have them finishing in the top four. Stevie says same old Arsenal, but neglected to mention that Arsenal lost 3-0 at Selhurst Park last season after starting out horribly and being down 2-0 inside 15 minutes. What aspect was the same exactly? Palace's first loss at home since February, it should be mentioned.
Well, it's dead simple. It's very, very simple and very straightforward. And unless you've got Arsenal glasses on, you'll be able to see it.
Right.
Arsenal against Crystal Palace on Friday.
Yes.
Not the weekend, on Friday.
Yep.
For 15 minutes were sensational.
Okay.
Right? Does that ring a bell about last year at any stage? Where in games they were sensational.
But they got it done.
For 15
they got
minutes.
It done.
Hold on. You can argue they got it done.
Yes.
But they got it done because Crystal Palace couldn't take two easy chances.
Right.
So the fact that they got it done is not my point. My point is the characteristics of the performance in general,
okay,
is what we saw last year from the same team. A team who, in a period in the game for 15 minutes,
right,
were fantastic. We saw that on numerous occasions last year. They were fantastic, but never killed the game.
Okay.
And then it becomes a gamble. It becomes a toss of a coin. Because up until the own goal, we, 10 minutes to go, that game was in the balance. It's exactly what we saw last year. Now, your argument, well, they finished it off. Well, yes, they did finish it off.
Oh, well, so you've got to just bury that argument under the carpet.
Had they not given any chances away,
right,
I would have been way more complimentary. But the fact is, they did give two fantastic chances away, and it was the ineptitude of Crystal Palace players who never took those chances. That's why they won the game in the end.
Don, are you buying what Stevie's selling?
What Stevie says there is factual. But what I think about Arsenal, I think what everyone thinks about Arsenal when you watch them is, have they got the minerals? And they proved at times last season where I think it might have been Wolves off the top of my head, but I think they went there with 10 men. I stand corrected if it wasn't Wolves. And they went there and got a 1-0 win, and you think, right, something's changing here. Then they bottled it against Tottenham. They went to St James's Park towards the end of the season and bottled that game as well. So it's the minerals. It's, have they got it? And what Stevie said there about the game and how the game went, correct. 1-0 up, Edouard missed a sitter of a header to make it 1-1, but they showed a little bit of character towards the end to see the game through. So that's my question for Arsenal this season, because I think they'll do really well this season. What, have they got the minerals to try and get there in the toughest of games? Chelsea, I think, next. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Chelsea, I think. No, it's not. That's Tottenham. Tottenham, Chelsea.
Stevie, with Manchester United struggling and Chelsea not looking convincing over the weekend, do you want to get out of the bet that you made with me for Arsenal not making the top four?
No. Chelsea will get better.
Why?
Yes!
Well, they can't be any worse. Just straight off the bat. They were absolutely terrible.
Why can't Arsenal
get
better?
Hold on a second.
Why can't Arsenal get better?
What was you saying to me a couple of minutes ago? They got it done, though.
Right. Yeah, against Everton.
Oh, sorry.
Everyone's going to win it.
Oh, so it doesn't count. 3 points. Did they get 3 points? They were absolutely atrocious, and they've got 3 points,
right,
and they're only going to get better.
So were they atrocious for the whole game, Chelsea?
Oh, pretty much.
So there was no 15 minutes of brilliance that there was for Arsenal?
No.
So surely Arsenal were ahead of the game because they put in that 15 minutes of brilliance compared to Chelsea? Zero.
See, sometimes when you have your clever dick ways, you actually, sometimes you make sense.
Right.
On this occasion, you're talking absolute garbage. Doesn't make any sense.
We'll see.
What are you talking about?
We'll see at the end of the season. We will see at the end of the season what's going to happen.
Listen, I've spent me $50 already.
I think, what did you put? Well, you had a Snickers and a Twix before we came on air.
I'm going to get potatoes in munch. Some cheese, make a shepherd's pie.
Oh, lovely. Go. That'd be nice.
A big one.
Have you had one of those before?
One or two.
Yep. Frank, as a player, wouldn't you be hesitant to join Barcelona after seeing how they're treating De Jong? Wouldn't you worry about how you would be treated in the future by the club if they no longer wanted you?
Yes and no. You know, because when he signed for Barcelona, he knew, in fact, what was going on at the club. They were struggling, you know, financially. And that would be a possibility if he was a good price that they will use him to fill up the bank account. So I understand that, and we all know that as players we are only products. You have to understand that they want you. When they don't want you, they sell you. They sell you because they need money. It happens to me in Laval, which is nothing to compare with Barcelona. But you know that you can be the best 1 year and be treated like garbage, you know, the year after, and you're going to be sold, and they're not going to treat you well. But it's part of our job. We have to be ready to be treated that way. And I think De Jong is ready. He's a big competitor, and he knows. And it's why, if he has the chance to go somewhere better, he's going to go. And he's not going to look back.
Final question, and it's for Steve. It's a bit negative, Steve. What do you think Trent Alexander-Arnold struggles with more? One-on-one defending or a total lack of defensive awareness? Wow. It's a bit harsh.
Wow.
Dear me.
Oh, get the mallet out and bash him.
Crikey.
I suppose I've got to answer the question, haven't I? I mean, you could argue that the goal at the weekend wasn't a complete lack of defensive awareness because he was in a position to affect it.
Right.
So you have to have some awareness to be in the right position. It just so happened that he couldn't do anything else to affect it. But the one-on-one stuff, oh, every time I see somebody going one-on-one, and I don't care who it is, I'm not talking about one-on-one with
Haaland.
Haaland or Dembele or something right. like that. Just one-on-one.
With Arnautovic?
I'm like, oh, I don't fancy him.
Could you help him, Frank?
I think it's difficult because the thing is, I think it's a mentality issue that that he has. I think he's been taught to go forward and never been taught how to defend well. So it's not part of his football genes. He hasn't got the reflex of doing what he has to do when we need him to do the things. And you see with other defenders, very good defenders, they have that immediate reaction when they have to do something defensively. They feel it. Thiago Silva, remember when he stopped the action on the pass against Everton, he knows exactly what to do. He plays with the striker and suddenly changed his position to get the ball back. Alexander Arnold, yes, he goes back to defend because he knows that's his job, but he doesn't want us. He's ready to be defeated. That's what you have to learn. You have to feel inside your bones that it's going to be a big shame if the striker gets the ball, and it's how you're going to be a survivor. But I don't know if you can change that at his age. It's maybe already too late.
You know when you sit at the computer and show me how to do stuff?
Yes, it's a favourite part of my day.
It's the same thing, you know, because there's no way he's not been put on a training field in a position and being coached and the things he should be thinking.
Right.
But some people just don't get it. No matter how many times you tell them, okay. No matter how many times you show them, they don't get it.
Right.
And you should know. The amount of times that you show me stuff on the computer.
Yes.
And then 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, I'm going, Dan.
Yes.
Some people just don't get it.
That's 100% true, by the way. That is it. We are done. Thank you very much.
I need my password.
Yeah,
too.
I know. We'll do that now. We'll go and sort your password out. We will be back tomorrow for more. Hope you're ahead to Real Madrid against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Ooh.
And Mark Clattenburg is here to talk about some of those big decisions that we saw at the weekend.